Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan, airbending lesson, Sax. Ethan, you have done some airbending, my friend.
I have done some airbending, and I'm sort of embarrassed to say that I had not made any kind of comparison with airbending lesson to, I think, Repulse has come up, but these sort of like Arrestor's Admonition, Talarian Geyser, like the cantripping bounce spells. It did not occur to me that that is what airbending lesson was, but that is what airbending lesson is, essentially. And our predictions, I think, about airbending in general panned out. Like our optimism about, I think this is going to be quite powerful and quite good, I think panned out, at least in my experience in early access.
Well, and airbending lesson is in a color that's better suited to use that tempo than blue. White wants to be aggressive, wants to get stuff off the board, wants to push damage. But I also watched you use it reactively against LSV in early access. He played the blue black rare Azula steal your stuff, and you just grinded over and over and airbended your stuff back to your side and recast it. That match was nutter butters.
Yeah, that was a very very unique case for airbending as a way to steal back the stuff that LSV's Azula was trying to steal from me. But yeah, airbending is really versatile. And I hadn't really picked up on this, but Samp has pointed out that it's only on a handful of cards at non-rare. Like, it doesn't come up that much, but it felt quite present. Maybe that's just because I was picking the cards highly or whatever, but airbending as a mechanic felt quite present in early access, despite it only showing up on a handful of cards.
Yeah, I did not get to airbend much, but I was very impressed with what I saw you do with airbending.
Yeah, airbending is sweet. So we are going to be doing some updates today for our Avatar The Last Airbender thoughts. We got to play in early access. Unfortunately, neither of us got to do a pre-release this time around, but we did jam as many drafts as we could during early access. We've got our updates there before the set goes live tomorrow on Tuesday. So we'll just dive into those after we do a little bit of housekeeping and talk about all the things that we saw and the things that we got to get our hands on. Let's chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. Of course, the show will always be free, but we have some great perks over at the Patreon page for folks wanting to check that out. One is access to our Discord, which is a great community of like-minded limited individuals. And the other is access to our podcast feed, where you not only get access to this episode a day early ad-free, but access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. If any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Alex, Yelt, Adam, Gorilla J, and Cody. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Every once in a while, and it does oftentimes happen around this time of the school year for me, you get very reflective around Thanksgiving. And I guess we're coming up on Thanksgiving. But
yeah,
I just was thinking the other day while I was driving about people taking time out of their day to go to Patreon to support a show that is totally optional, that's going to be there for them, like whether or not they take the time to do that, to pledge time and money and effort and like mental stuff. And I just, it's so appreciated. Like, whether you're on Patreon or not, like listening to the show, we appreciate all of you. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? It's such a rare glimpse, but I do love a reflective Ben. I feel like it doesn't happen that often.
It's
but what happens
for me usually, I'm a very reflective person. It's just a privately reflective. Like, we would always, in education classes, that was like a really big thing in college. Like, you'd do your practice teaching and your homework would be to write a reflection on your practice teaching event. And I remember distinctly asking my professor one time, like, why do we have to do this? This feels like busy work. This is such a waste of time. And they're like, well, it's important to reflect on these things. And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm going to reflect on it, whether or not I have to do this assignment. My professor was like, well, not everybody does, so we want to make sure that we do it as an assignment so that everybody does take some time to reflect. But I am constantly reflecting on things that I do.
Well, you're going to be reflecting today on your experience in early access for our dear sweet listeners. So where do you want to start things off?
Well, the good news is, for our dear sweet listeners, early access was a blast, and this format looks like it is going to be very fun. I would say, like, early reviews to start big picture, I think you had a ton of fun and I had a lot of fun also.
Yeah, I'm usually quite hesitant to make those kinds of sweeping. Like, I feel like you usually out the gate are like, is this the GOAT during early access? And I'm always like, well, we've played three games, so I don't know if we want to make those assumptions. And I'm not saying that Avatar is GOATed status, but it was really sweet. I like messaged my friends who I usually do my pre-release with, and I was like, good news. I think we've got like a banger on our hands. So that's as much of a praise that I'll give early access. And who knows what the like lifespan of the set will prove to be in terms of like how deep it is. But early returns are that it was really fun. Like all four mechanics, as we'll get into, are really awesome. They play out really sweet. There's a lot of nuance to them. And it just feels, as we thought, it feels like magic, even though it's
the UB elements. So the bending elements are very magic-esque, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to start with sort of how I was feeling in the drafts. That's just sort of like how my mind works when I'm thinking about like, okay, how are we going to like talk about stuff? I was like, well, I go from like drafts to deck building and archetypes to gameplay and individual cards. But my feelings about the draft was that signal reading and willingness to pivot in pack one especially were pretty essential to ending up in a functional deck. And again, caveats aside, like we'll do the caveat of this is based on whatever, nearly a dozen drafts in the 24 hours of early access, maybe just shy of that. So small sample size, of course, but I definitely had a few drafts where I was rewarded for pivoting, like in pack one, for either, you know, some top commons or strong uncommons, even if they weren't in line with what I had already picked. And I also had the reverse feeling of like trying to do something, like trying to do Teamer Lessons or trying to do Black White Sacrifice and it not being quite open and really struggling, specifically because card quality, as I think we talked about, drops off a cliff with the commons. And not to say that the commons are bad, but then they're all quite situational. And so when you're in a lane that is contested and you don't get to get anything on the wheel, you're really struggling because sometimes you're going to have packs in those first eight picks of packs one, two, and three. You're going to have packs where there's not an exciting pick. And so if you have those paired with, oh, and I have nothing that I'm picking up on the wheel, it's a really tough time. And so I think when you, if you feel like there's something passing you by or seeing a, I don't know, a top common or a strong uncommon, even pick six, seven, eight, I was happier or happiest when I was speculating on those.
So I think this dives into maybe a broader topic for the format as a whole, too. I felt like playing the format and drafting the format that I was incentivized to go after one color. Like we had talked about the colors kind of having an identity, like you felt the white very strongly wanted to go wide. I do feel like red really strongly wants to firebend, like green really strongly wants to earthbend. I felt incentivized to get deep into a color and then try to figure out what other color I wanted to pair with that versus, like, I think some of the color pairs, and then we're going to talk about each one later in the episode, but green-black, for example, feels it very much wants to be green-black. Whereas, you know, something like when you start red, you're fine to be red-white, you're fine to be red-blue, you're fine to be red-black. Because red is such a strong thing. And I felt myself getting into trouble when I narrowed in on a two-color archetype too soon. Like, that was when I felt myself get into trouble. If I was pinched on a two-color archetype, but if I could find an open color and then follow that color where the signals took me, I had a lot more success. But a couple times I did feel that pinch on, oh, wow, like, I just am not getting cards, period.
Yeah, and that is the feeling I'm trying to avoid and trying to get our listeners to avoid, because I think there's a lot of fun stuff to go after. It's a real balance, because I think there are sweet things to go after, like I think trying to do lessons or trying to do whatever sort of synergistic things exist in the format, but I don't think those are things you can force, or I didn't feel like I could force them because of the lack of card quality across the board, and I think partially there being just a lot of secret gold cards or cards that felt like best in this archetype, second best in this archetype, unplayable in these two archetypes or whatever. That if those are the blue cards you're seeing on the wheel or whatever, it's tough to get a functional deck.
I felt this also, and I want to run this past you and see if it rings true to you or not, which is that I did some of what you're trying to do, because that's a natural thing to do in early access, right? Like, you get a few cards, and you're like, let me lean hard into this and see how far I can go. And that's not necessarily always the best draft strategy, but I felt like when the highly synergistic things came together, they were better than just raw power level. But that there are, like, there are almost three types of decks seated in the format. There's like some extremely highly synergistic linear decks. I think those felt extremely good, but also dangerous to draft. And then that there were, like, green especially wants to play just a lot of good cards and can splash around and play a lot of powerful rares. That's also a good strategy, but struggled against the highly synergistic tempo aggro decks. But then there's also just, if you let the draft flow a little more naturally, I think, to borrow from Alex and Court of Calls and Limited Level Ups, there's a lot of pockets of synergy type stuff going on that comes together pretty naturally, that is less risky to let come together, but then isn't as powerful as those extremely synergistic decks or just, you know, some of the green good rares type decks.
So what's the takeaway there? Like, don't sacrifice power for synergy in your pick order. Don't make concessions in your pick order.
I think just if you're trying to draft a synergistic deck, do it with eyes wide open and know that it's a very risk reward scenario. Like, for example, a card I'm sure we're going to be talking a lot about this format is Fire Nation Cadets, which is single red for a 1/2 at common, has firebending too, as long as there's a lesson in your graveyard. And so it gives you red when it attacks, and then it can filter that mana into itself, pay 2 mana to give it +1/+0 until end of turn. But the better thing to do is to filter that mana into other stuff. It's a very powerful, extremely synergistic card. And when Firebending Cadets pops off, it's near unbeatable, but it can also flop in both gameplay and the draft. It's a very high risk, high reward card, in my opinion. And I think there's several strategies like that, that if you start drafting them and they don't come together, your deck is really, really, really poor. But if they do come together, your deck is awesome. So I think just making an informed choice about what you're trying to do in the draft.
Yeah. Okay. I buy that.
And I watched a couple of your drafts once you, like, halfway sideways out of the corner of my eye while I was doing my own drafting and gameplay. But I think once you had decided, well, I'm going to pivot, it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. It was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy for you that you needed to pivot then, because you were drafting in such a way that you were trying to stay so open. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And so do you think that was to the detriment of me finding the right lane or something like that?
No, I just think mostly that the drafts are interesting. And I think I think usually it's easy to put a stamp on a format of like, well, this is a synergy format, or this is a powerful format. But I think this one is somewhere in the middle and you're going to have to do it all. Like, I think there's really good rares that want you to make sure that you can cast them. And oftentimes that means being green and taking fixing highly and all that sorts of stuff. But then it does look to me like the red and blue red, especially tempo aggro decks, are going to get there. And those are extremely streamlined. And I think you're going to have all the tools in your tool belt. I guess that's the takeaway for me.
Yes. Yeah. Except, and blue red is a really interesting example, because it was a deck that I, like, you know, we were sort of excited about during previews, then a little skeptical of during Crash Course because of, oh, is this going to be too fussy, too finicky, too small ball, getting stuff the size of green creatures, etc. And then I witnessed some really good blue-red decks with the Drakes, and I was like, oh, I want to draft that. But that sort of energy, that, like, ooh, I lost to that, I want to draft that.
It doesn't work very well in this format.
Did not serve me well. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
So that takes us on to gameplay. We had some questions in the Discord, and I was also just reflecting on this. I was under the impression, I didn't know that, spoiler for our listeners, Ben played hooky first half of the school day on Thursday to get some more drafts in. But I was like, oh, I'm going to have to hunker down. And, like, usually Ben is the one who puts together the really good big picture thoughts. And I was like, I'm going to have to hunker down and really think about this. So I was thinking about how are games playing out? Because usually I would just be like, I don't know, I lost to some stuff, won with some stuff. For me, I think I would put them in three buckets for how games played out. One was, and this honestly felt like the most common one, was like some sort of extremely tempo positive turn from a player around turn 4 or 5, whether it was like I quench your thing end step. You tapped out to play something on five. I quenched it. I untap. I play something snowbally. Or really, and we'll talk about firebending as a mechanic and how it played out, but just when people got to attack with a firebending two thing on turn four or whatever and use that mana on real spells, it just feels hard to come back from that. You're like, oh, I don't know if I can catch up to that, what you did.
Yeah, when firebending works, it is totally broken.
Yeah. In the way that, like, I feel like we are often like, ooh, and again, we'll talk about all four of the mechanics. Sort of what I was thinking waterbending was going to do of like, oh, well, it's convoke, it's improvise, it's this way to, like, you know, use other resources for mana. But firebending is just like, no, here's some mana. Do you have something good to do with it? And oftentimes you can have real things to do with it.
Yes.
I did get into some board stalls for sure. Grindy resource accrual on both sides with waterbending and clues. Those games are fun, but very grindy. And then I found that earthbending go tall was either pretty successful at putting your opponent in the abyss, like having to chump a 7/7 or a 9/9 turn after turn. Or if you have Badgermole in play, they'll just be dead in a few turns because it has trample.
Yeah, I definitely felt that going tall from earthbending was better than going wide mm-hmm. in general. But the thing that stood out for me most from gameplay was flying, which is like more news at 11. Flying's good and limited, but it was really, really, really good this time around because the board gets gummed up so easily with there's like 1/1 ally tokens laying around everywhere. There's small earthbending tokens that feel free to chump with everywhere. There's just a ton of stuff on the battlefield, and being able to fly over the top felt very good. And there's also several creatures that can just be straight unblockable. The stupid little penguins that look horrible, the 2/1 penguins that when you draw your second card.
Oh, I haven't seen those.
They were impressive in a blue-white tempo deck that could draw some cards. I played very good cards, and I was going to win the game easily, but I couldn't get those off the battlefield, and they killed me before I could kill my opponent. And not just once. Like, it happened to me a couple times. And then also the giant koi, the 5/7,
yeah,
can become unblockable for just 3 mana or something. Normally you have to sink a whole turn into making a creature like that unblockable, but it's not waterbending. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's that card's been very impressive as a clock to end games, like to end those types of games you're talking about that are those giant sprawling board states. I was very impressed with both flying and unblockable.
Yeah, I had I forget what deck I was piloting, but it felt like very, very strong. And I played against a deck that just was like glider kids into something else. Then those are the 2/3 flyers that scry one. And it was a really close game. Like, they would have killed me the next turn. And it was just like, yeah, because flying is actually kind of tough to interact with currently.
And the other thing that really stood out to me was that tempo decks felt like they were a thing, which is, I really enjoy playing that style of Magic. Like you had said, we were kind of hot on blue red, kind of cold. I'm back to hot on blue red, and just tempo in general, being able to leverage that against your opponents who are trying to do the big splashy rares thing. I really like firebending as a mechanic, which is unusual for me to be coming out hot for an aggressive mechanic, but firebending is sweet. It's very fun. It feels like doing something illegal when you are popping off with firebending, and I really enjoy doing broken things in Magic, and if that is on an attacking mechanic, sign me up to do some attacking. But all of that together, I think the thing I'm most looking forward to doing starting on day one of drafts is explore more of firebending.
Yes, I agree. All right, well, I do want to talk about the mechanics. I've got like an updated power rankings here. We're going to talk more about firebending, and I just want to reiterate again that these mechanics are all really sweet and feel like skill testing and fun and powerful and synergistic in their own ways and overlapping. And I just think like there's a lot to explore. And I have that same feeling of you of like, I'm excited about firebending because I was low on it last week and now I'm much higher on it. I'm excited. I'm lower on waterbending, but I'm still excited to see what it has to offer, etc. And I am still just as high on airbending as I was last week. Airbending is super sick. We need to talk about how good Airbending Lesson is.
Yeah, I mean, please sign me up. It was in my top comments that matter.
I think that's a great take. I think it is not it's definitely one of the best commons in the set, and I think is the top common. So this is the 2 and a white instant airbend a non-land permanent and draw a card. And to remind folks again what these mechanics do, airbending is the thing that you exile something and then its owner may cast it for 2 generic mana instead of paying its mana cost. So it's not like quite bouncing it, right? You don't get the huge tempo boost of like, oh, I airbended your 6-drop and now you have to replay it for your whole turn. It's like, no, it only costs 2 mana, but it's still really good. And something like Airbending Lesson is just so flexible. Sometimes you do like just take out their 2-drop. Like I had someone Airbending Lesson my 2-drop on turn 3, and I was like, oh, I can't recast that until turn 5 because I'm curving out otherwise.
And by so then it's totally irrelevant. Yeah,
exactly. Or there's a lot of things with +1/+1 counters or things that like grow with +1/+1 counters. We'll talk about some of those cards. You get to reset those. Sometimes you save your own thing. You rebuy an ETB. There's this cycle of ascensions, and the red one, this rare one, makes a 2/2 with fire breathing 1. Okay, so then I just airbend that enchantment and then replay it. And like, that's a really sweet thing to do. It's very flexible. It's very powerful as a mechanic. And Airbending Lesson, I think, is a common to watch out for sure.
Yeah, I don't think were you saying it's the best common in the format? I don't think it's the best common in the whole format.
Best white common, I think.
Best white common. That I would sign up for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Airbending looks excellent. I have not had a chance to do it, but when I have, or when it was done to me, it was quite annoying. Takes us on to the next mechanic, which is firebending, which is a juicy, juicy mechanic.
I think I was too tunneled looking at it with like the inherent payoffs, like being like, okay, so this card, I mean, Fire Nation Cadets is a great example, that single red 1/2 that has firebending too if you have a lesson in your yard. I was looking at that and I was like, okay, so it makes firebending too, and then you can use that 2 mana to pump into it. No, when it, and that's fine, that's all fine and good to like have the card that has firebending be a mana sink for the mana. But when it's really good is when you have other stuff to do with the mana, when you have instants that you can play in support of them or whatever.
Right. Like when you're attacking and then with firebending mana, you kill your opponent's blocker. Like you're like, oh, did I just got 4 mana to kill my opponent's blocker for free? Yeah. Like it feels totally nuts.
Yeah. Because those creatures, like they're not, I feel like oftentimes maybe we would think that the creatures would like be understated with firebending. They're not really. And so you don't need to use the mana like Fire Nation Cadets. Yeah, it's a 1-mana 1/2, but it's a 1-mana 1/2, and that's fine. And you can pump the mana into it if you need to. But a lot of times they're just on like 3-mana 2/3s with Menace or 4-mana 4/3s. And you're like, these are like fine stats. And then if I use this mana on real spells, it's insane.
Right. It's like significant mana ramp dorks that are also good at pressuring your opponent's life total. Like you're doing both things. You're putting your opponent under pressure and you're ramping your mana advantage. It's mm-hmm. a lot of advantage when it happens. So one of the best cards I found during early access with firebending was Cunning Maneuver, which we had this in Greater Garbage and we were like, are we bad at aggro? Turns out this card is great with firebending because it's a 1 and a red instant. Target creature gets +3/+1 until end of turn. So what you want is tricks to enable your attacks, because you attack, your opponent's like, well, okay, I'll block, you're firebending, and then you use that instant speed mana, and it does, like it lasting for all of combat is so good too. I think for whatever reason I had shortcutted in my brain prior to playing with it that you got it during your declare attacker step or something, mm-hmm. but it lasts all of combat, so you can use it on combat tricks that go through combat. And then after you cast Cunning Maneuver and either win your combat or trade up, you get the clue token to sink your firebending mana into on a future turn for free cards. I think it's going to be one of the most complicated mechanics, and maybe not. Maybe it's just too broken and everybody's going to be smashing everybody over with firebending stuff, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to require gumptioning, like sticking to your guns in the draft, and I think mm-hmm. it's going to require really tight deck building, and maybe the recipe will just become apparent quickly, but you really want a mix of stuff like Fire Nation Cadets to get you going early, tricks like Cunning Maneuver, Lightning Strike. I still haven't cast a Firebending Lesson, and I'm so high on that card for not having cast it, which is the single red shock that's a lesson, and then can also deal 4 damage for 5 mana. But all of that in tandem with each other, being able to pressure your opponent, it's easy to look at Firebending and say, well, the fail case is it's not going to work sometimes, right? Because you have to have attacks. But the mechanic intrinsically helps you have attacks by giving you extra mana to spend on tricks and removal spells.
Well, and it doesn't feel good to be facing an attack and your opponent floats 3 red mana. You're like, what am I supposed to do? Like, because it's really hard to know, like, okay, if I make this block, then they would have to do X with the mana. It's like, well, they might do that, or they might crack a clue, or they might have a trick, or they, you know, like, and I think Fire Nation Cadets, you know, NCAA, who is a longtime member of our Discord, was in my chat watching a little bit. I mean, we played against each other, and he had a mono red deck with multiple Fire Nation Cadets.
Mono red's definitely a thing in this format, for sure.
For sure. Well, and that's, it feels like, I think one of my format truths held true of, like, you're going to be thinking about mana bases, and I do think the hybrid mana costed cards will lead people to. So I had a mono white deck in early access. Like, I think mono colored decks are a thing in this format. For sure.
But I think of them, mono red seems like the clearest and the best to me.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. The mono white payoff is pretty nuts. But anyway, he was referring to Fire Nation Cadets as Soul Ring, which is extremely good content, very hyperbolic, gets the people talking, but I think does speak to the sort of spectrum of, like, inherent power to synergy that is present in this format, where, like, if you get Fire Nation Cadets to feel like Soul Ring, you're doing it. And I don't know if you're going to be able to do that draft in and draft out. You're talking about some gumptioning, some sort of, like, build it and they will come strategies with firebending and the lessons. But I don't know where that's going to land. But I do know that you can get Fire Nation Cadets to feel like Soul Ring. And when it does, it's broken.
Yes. And I think per our discussion earlier in the episode about drafts, currently, that feels like a fairly risky strategy to me, like, in terms of, like, you really have to commit because you need the Fire Nation Cadets, but you can't really spend the high picks on the Fire Nation Cadets because you also need the Firebending Lessons and you need the Lightning Strikes, you need the Cunning Maneuvers. Like, you need red to be open. Like, I'm curious what happens in drafts where red is fairly contested and how contested red is going to be, because This is not the type of deck I naturally gravitate towards, and I'm gravitating towards it pretty hard, or planning to, on my first few drafts of day one, because of how fun it was. It's a very fun mechanic.
Yeah, agreed. All right, that takes us on to number 3, which is Earthbending. And I was sort of skeptical, or not skeptical, but I was curious, are there going to be things that feel like gotcha moments with this, with Earthbending, with animating your lands, and, like, how are people going to be able to punish you? And it does feel like it's mostly just upside. I think there are some ways to punish it. Like, if you kill an Earthbent land in your opponent's upkeep, it'll then come back tapped. So it's a little bit of mana denial, but largely it's just nice to have the flexibility of this is a creature or mana, or, like, basically when you're Earthbending in the early turns, you're treating that land like a land. And then it's sort of like, and then by turn 6, you're like, and now I have a 4/4 with haste that I can use at my disposal. And I will say, when you get both, when you get to treat it as both a land and a creature, it's super awesome, which is why Vigilance is great in conjunction with this mechanic, specifically with Rumble Arena, which is the land that has Vigilance. When it enters, you scry 1, and it taps for colorless, or you can filter it for a mana of any color. Going tall on Rumble Arena was really strong for me in my Earthbending decks on Wednesday.
Well, and some of the interaction, the reason I think going tall is better is some of the interaction can't hit lands. And so there's times, like, that it's almost a benefit to go tall on your Earthbending lesson because it dodges some portion of the removal in the format.
You can't, I should check this, but, like, Airbending Lesson and Aang, the uncommon 3/2 flyer that airbends, both are airbend a non-land permanent, which feels like, oh, I can hit anything, but you can't hit the 6/6 Vigilant Rumble Arena.
Correct.
So I mostly, and I want to be clear, mostly high on Earthbending as incidental earthbending. Like you were talking about Toph, the uncommon. That's like the star three that enters Earthbends 2 and has power equal to the number of counters you have on lands. Like
that card's ridiculous.
That card's ridiculous, but that's because it's a 3-mana 2/3 that comes with a 2/2. And yes. then some. And so I'm not like super high on like Earthbending Lesson, for example, which is the 4-mana lesson that Earthbends 4 at sorcery speed. But that might even just be good. Like 4/4 is large, but I'm more interested in incidental earthbending, like the general, the 4-mana uncommon that is a 2/2, earthbends 2 and gains you life when you put counters on lands. Like that kind of card plus earthbending, I think, is much better than just straight up earthbending.
I do like Earthbending Lesson, I think, a little more than that. I played quite a bit of green, and green play a lot of good rares decks in early access. I cast a lot of Aangs of different varieties during early access.
Did you cast often, the four-color one?
I did not cast the straight four-color one. I cast the Collected Company one, like the two and Bant. I had double copies of that in a deck, and it was really dumb, along with several other good Toph rares and things. But Earthbending Lesson, oftentimes the green decks want lessons as well. So Earthbending Lesson filling the role of a lesson plus a creature is kind of nice for green decks. But I agree, it's not a great card. I think maybe just a slight bump up for being a lesson.
That's a good point. We should probably drive that home, that lessons still do matter. Like we had eyes for that last week of like, I think just lessons as a type is going to bump cards up slightly. And I think that probably is going to do some lifting for Earthbending Lesson in your pick order, but I'm still not quite sure where that lands for me. Which brings us to...
Not a high pick or anything like that. Just a card that you're going to be including in green decks, I think.
For sure. Yeah. Which brings us to, in fourth place for me right now, is Waterbending. How do you feel about this? Waterbending falling to fourth.
I think it's right. I don't love it. I mean, because I wanted Waterbending to be good, but I think I was listening to LR this morning while I was getting ready, and one of LSV's points was waterbending is just going to happen. You don't really need to build around it. It's just a good mana sink. And I think I wanted to like turbo waterbend or something, and that's just not really a thing. Like you just need to get to the late game, and then you're going to be able to waterbend.
That's the thing. But I think what we were, again, we were looking at it with like, okay, it's like Convoke and like Improvise, and so you're going to get to cheat on mana. But two things are true. One is that firebending is the mechanic that lets you cheat on mana, that lets you get ahead.
Firebending is just better at it. Yeah. As far as being ahead of your opponent, yes.
Slash, they work quite well in tandem. Like being able to, if you have instant speed waterbending mana sinks, your firebending mana plays so well with that. I also think the other thing about that we thought last week about there being tension between blue doing some spells matter stuff and some waterbending stuff, that tension exists, and you can't, like, the two don't really play nicely with each other. If you're trying to do, you know, instant speed, lessons in the graveyard, whatever, that doesn't really play well with I want rectangles on the board for waterbending. But the last thing is that there really aren't a lot of good waterbending cards. Like, they're not, the waterbending as mana sinks, there's not a lot of great ones. Like Water Tribe Rallier was very impressive to me. So shout out, point for you. The one and a white 2/2. There's Waterbending 5. You like look at the top four cards and you can pick something with mana value 3 or less and put it into your hand. That I found really strong in a mono white deck that just sort of let me play out controlling. I think Katara Bending Prodigy is probably still a very good waterbending sink. The 2 and a blue 2/3 that has Waterbending 6 draw card. But beyond those two, there aren't really good waterbending sinks. There's like a waterbend four to loot on a like filler 4/3 flyer. There's the waterbending 3 on the giant koi that we talked about to give it unblockable. But by that point, you're like, I could also just pay 3 mana for this and that would be fine.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, that hits home with me. I did not get a chance to waterbend during early access, but I also didn't face much waterbending. I only did 4 drafts during early access, so not a ton of experience there, but I think it's right to have waterbending in fourth. I think it is the one that is going to happen most naturally that you don't need to do any building around. And I thought you were going to be able to build around it, I think. So I'm going into the format, firebending is what I want to do.
Yeah, I agree. Well, actually, airbending is what I want to do, but that's neither here nor there.
I think another mechanic that we shout out is clues. Like, we didn't talk much about clues. Just want to restate that card advantage is great, and cards that have clues are very good. Like, we were kind of poo-pooing that 1-2 flyer, the blue-black hybrid common.
Oh, yeah!
It, Messenger if you Hawk. Make a clue, and then we were like, it's too small ball in 2025. You can't spend 3 mana to make a 1-2. Turns out you can still spend 3 mana to make a 1-2 if it brings a card along with it.
Yeah, Messenger Hawk really overperformed. Again, not like it's a top common, I think, but Messenger Hawk is the perfect example of like a card. If I'm seeing that card like pick 7, pick 8, even on the wheel, and I feel like I can't draft it, that felt bad to me. Because I'm like, oh, that's the kind of card that would be good if I could put it in my deck, but I can't.
Yeah. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Winter is coming, which means shorter days, but they don't have to be dismal. It's time to reach out and check in with those you care about and to remind ourselves that we're not alone.
I have an old friend from grade school who I have not connected with in a long time. Every few months, one of us will call or text the other, but our schedules never quite line up. And then I get my anxiety creeping in about how long it's been. Will it be awkward? I feel guilty about not having gotten back. It's on me to text back or to call next or whatever. And I make it a bigger deal than it actually is. And then we actually get on the phone, and it's great to catch up about our life and our kids, and I wonder what I was even worried about.
Seasonal depression is no joke, and it's important to stay connected. We're healthier when we have community, and we have support from friends, family, or therapy. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally.
This month, don't wait to reach out. Whether you're checking in on a friend or reaching out to a therapist yourself, BetterHelp makes it easier to take your first step.
Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Lords. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Lords. And now, back to the show. So I want to get into just impressions of the archetypes, because I don't have a strong sense of rankings or anything like that. I didn't play enough to get that, but I did have ones that felt good or felt worse to me than others, and I'm curious to see if that lines up with you. So blue-white, I liked it better as evasive, tempo, aggro than what I was picturing in my head, which was blue-white, waterbending, clog the board, win the late game.
Yes, I agree. Though, can we talk about this? I put the signpost or one of the signposts in my movers down, which is Air Nomad Legacy. This is the one in a blue enchantment when it enters, or sorry, not one in a blue, white blue for an enchantment. When it enters, you make a clue, and flying creatures you control get +1/+1. I was like, are there that many flyers?
I think there's enough. I think flying's good enough. I'm pretty excited. I have not seen it on the battlefield yet, but I'm excited to play with that card if you can make it work. There's the 1-2 in blue that gets +1/+1 if you have a lesson. Turning your Messenger Hawk into a 2-3 is awesome. Mm-hmm. There's the 2-2 prowess flying vigilance card. Mm-hmm. Cards. I think there are ways to make it work, and I do think it will be a pretty good deck if you can.
Okay. All right. That tracks for me. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely on board with blue-white not as good. Blue-white better doing tempo play to the board stuff, just because that's so much what white wants to be doing.
Right. Well, and there's another phenomenon, I think, which we haven't talked about much yet, which is there are some really oppressive rares in the format. And if you're trying to play a long game, like a control game with like blue-white waterbending, clog the board, I'm going to win with my mana sinks, or black-white, I'm going to grind out some incidental advantage over the course of a really long game. There's just a lot of cards that are powerful enough that they invalidate all of those small advantages you've accrued from waterbending or in the black-white sacrifice deck. So I am pretty wary of those decks without their own broken rares to compete into the late game.
Yes, I agree.
Takes us on to white green allies. I didn't see any dedicated allies decks, but it all looks like it's there to me. Did you have experience playing with or against it?
I played a mono white allies matter deck, so I'm sure if I had some green cards that wanted to go in there, I would have played them. Allies as a thing, like, I think the same what we thought and what we were saying and what have said about lessons, as like lessons matter, be aware of what cards are lessons. allies matter, be aware of what cards are allies. Because there's a lot of cards.
Right? Like it's hard if you're white to not have ally synergy, right?
Totally agree. But there's also, as much as there are a lot of allies, there's also a lot of cards that make allies better. Like it gets a lot of support and a lot of payoffs.
Do you have a sense for where that falls compared to some of the other good decks? Like I was really impressed with Blue Red. I was really impressed with Firebending decks. Do you think it's going to hang with all that stuff?
The mono white deck I had was the only 5-0, like the only undefeated deck I had during early access. So I think it's good. I think it's up there. And it wasn't like, it's not like I had some rares, but they weren't busted. It was this, it's that signpost, not signpost. It's the uncommon payoff. I forget its name, but the 4 and a white make a 1/1 ally for each
planes you control
and scry to. That card is nuts.
Right. If you can be mono white.
And then you've got, even if you just got Wandering Musician, the 2/5 that pumps your team, like there's ways to pump your team or ways to pump allies. And, you know, if you have the 3-mana 2/2 ally that grows when you play allies and you play that, and then you're dumping 5 counters on it at once, like there's a lot to like about that.
Okay, cool. White red, I also did not play with or against much, but your red white airbending deck was fast and could impressively grind.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's kind of crazy that I was like, oh, this is a Boros deck. Yeah, Boros was the first deck I drafted in early access, and it overperformed pretty massively for me. And that was another great draft where I was like, I was trying to be blue. Like, I think my first like 4 of my 5 picks were blue, and then started to bob and weave a little bit, got a red white signpost on the wheel and drafted a really good deck. And red white, the combo of, I mean, Airbending Lesson is just such a great example of a card that plays so nicely with Firebending mana. Cause you're like, ooh, I got 2 red. Let me just add a little, my tap this planes here. And now I get to cast this incredibly impactful spell in the middle of combat.
Right. Well, similarly, red blue, I think, gets that bump also. Where was your white red deck more of a firebending deck, or was it just good red white aggro that had a mix of firebending and airbending?
Maybe most of the firebending came from Sun Warriors, the red white uncommon 3/5 that firebends X for the amount of creatures you have. Maybe that was mostly where I was getting
stupid.
Yeah, that card is dumb. 5 toughness is big. And it's just like, it does everything because it's a payoff and an enabler, right? It's giving you a great place to put the mana and giving you tons of mana to put into that mana sink, you know?
Well, but just Firebending 3 or Firebending 4, which is not that uncommon with that card, lets you cast a very real spell.
Yes.
Outside of the mana sink for it. Yeah. Sun Warriors is ridiculous. I was really impressed with red white. I would expect that would be one of the better decks. And I am curious to see how many flavors they're going to be. Like if there's heavy white, little bit of red, if there's heavy red, little bit of white, what those distinctions are, but that all seems quite good to me.
Mm-hmm.
White black, I played and was not very impressed. Not that the deck did its thing. Like I think it does what it does as advertised. It just suffers from the problem I alluded to with blue white trying to go late game, which is that people are going to play some really good cards against you if the game goes late. And if you don't have your own, like this, the small ball synergy of white black is not enough to overcome, I don't think, some of those busted rares that exist.
Here's my relationship with black white, which was that Ben drafted a sweet black white deck. He was playing it on stream. He was like, oh, you're going to really like black white, Ethan. This deck is fun. And then you went 0-3 with it. And I was like,
I'm going 0-3 with it.
I know, but it felt like an indictment of me. You're like, Ethan, you're gonna love losing with this pile of garbage. And I'm like, I think I probably will. But yeah, those watching that deck play out for you on stream, it just always felt like you were doing the thing and one step behind.
Yes, that was
which
how I felt.
It's not great.
Blue green, I think, is a very good base to play all the good cards. Like, I think that is, I don't think you need to be super hyper lesson focused, but just green decks in general, I think, are incentivized to more often than not play quite a bit of colors, thanks to there being a lot of good green multicolored rares.
I did do a like blue green. I mean, it was more teamer, but I did do like tried to do the lessons thing. I will say a lot of the just buyer beware in terms of so many cards mill you in that deck. And so many of the what that deck is trying to do is draw cards. So you're drawing lots of cards, you're milling yourself, and there is no way to shuffle in your graveyard into your library. Like, I think those decks are gonna like self mill a lot of the time. I don't know. That was my feeling with my one deck, was like, do I have enough turns to win once I stabilize? I don't know.
Carl's era is here. You gotta get that 47 card deck going.
I guess so. I guess so.
Blue black was extremely impressive. I think it's got good removal, it's got good card advantage, it's got powerful cards. I liked blue black as a control deck that took advantage of just clues to bury your opponent in card advantage.
And one of the things that one of the reasons I think Messenger Hawk is good is that it's like speed bumpy as this 3-mana 1/2 flyer, but then it can also just kind of be your win condition in those decks.
Right. Flying's good. Messenger Hawk was a problem.
Yeah. But you know, like Thraben Inspector, you're like, I don't want to use a removal spell on your Thraben Inspector, you're going to have to use a removal spell on Messenger Hawk, and they're going to 2-for-1 you, and that you're just going to have to deal with it.
I think Messenger Hawk is better than Sneaky Good. I think it is just good.
Well, it's sneaky good in the sense that it eluded us.
It did elude us, but not after playing with it. After playing with and against it very quickly, I was like, oh, I want to pick this card a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Blue-red, I'm in. I'm convinced the blue-red is going to get there. Maybe I'll eat my words, but I don't think so. I think the firebending stuff is good enough, and blue supports red's firebending stuff really well. Like, blue-red is where you're going to turn Fire Nation Cadets into Sol Ring most reliably, in my opinion. Because blue gives you some more cheap lessons, like that blue, the single blue sorcery lesson that bounces is so good in blue-red.
Boomerang Basics.
Yeah, that card is excellent. Firebending lesson I still haven't cast, but I can imagine how beautiful it's going to be when I get to cast my first firebending lesson. So I think firebending is good, and I think blue red is the best support home for firebending, because the blue spells give you places to put your firebending mana too. Like, all of a sudden you're 4 and a blue instant, top or bottom, make a clue. If you can get that to cost 3 because you have firebending too, that feels totally insane doing that sort of thing. So I think blue spells naturally pair well with what red wants to do. Firebending, like just that blue red tempo prowess, keep your opponent off balance, get ahead on mana. I really am in on that.
Yeah.
Red green, I've not played as much as blue green, but so, I mean, it sort of all blends together in the teamer space, I think. And it's not super impressive, I don't think, without rares, but with rares, it's pretty juiced. Like the red green Toph is. The red green Toph rare is broken.
This is a 3/4 for 2 red green that lets you, when it enters, you can discard a card. If you do, return an instant or sorcery from your graveyard to your hand. But more importantly, whenever you cast a spell, you earthbend 1. And if that spell was a lesson, you earthbend 2 instead. Yeah, it's really good. It's a really good card. I had a deck with 2 of those. And so I was like, when I saw red green, not super impressive, I was like, oh, come on. I had a great red green deck. And then you're saying not super impressive without rares. I'm like, ah, yes, I had 2 of those. So pretty good time.
Green black, I've not played with or against yet, but it does, just looking at it, look very dedicated to the green black gold cards, very dedicated to earth bending synergies. And that makes me a little nervous for it, because it doesn't seem like there's that much bleed there. Like, it doesn't seem like a great base for green multicolored stuff. A lot of the good green multicolored rares don't have black in their cost, and I don't think earthbending is that good to where I'm going to want to go hard after green black. So I'm a little worried for green black.
Well, and you've got red black last year, firebending is good, but you're not sure that black adds that much to what red is doing. And it kind of brings me to, where are we at on black? I know I was like, ooh, it looks like an Esper format to me. I was liking what black had to offer last week, and I'm not so much anymore. And I'm much more in line with your skepticism of, you know, the all 4 bendings live in the other 4 colors. Black doesn't get an inherent bending. And black doesn't add a lot to those bendings. Like, I think it's best is with blue-black, just as giving, you know, it's a support color, giving good removal to that color pair. But, you know, black white is, I think, ostensibly where black gets to shine. And that is not a color pair that you and I were very happy with on Wednesday. So I'm curious to see where black shakes out, but it's not a good early return for me on black in the format.
Yeah, if I had to choose right now color power rankings, like I said, I've only done four drafts. I would say white and red at the top, black in the rear, and then blue and green in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that tracks. I don't know. That doesn't, like, the big thing for me is I think I'm gonna be soft avoiding black to start, because I'm just not convinced. What I did and saw on Wednesday did not leave me going, oh, I think I know how black fits into this puzzle.
Right. Yeah. And maybe it'll just take some time to shake out. But I think right now, if I had to peg it, I would say Jeskai format.
Yeah. Let's chat some individual cards. We've already alluded to some of these, so we'll skip those. I want to talk about Barrels of Blasting Jelly. This is a one mana artifact. It filters mana. You can pay one to add a mana of any color, activate only once each turn, and you can pay five, tap, sack this artifact. It deals five damage to target creature. This, I think, is actually my vote for Golden Egg right now. I know I was saying that I didn't think waterbending was that good or whatever, but this is still a mana dork for waterbending, and then is also a removal spell, and it fixes your mana, which some decks are interested in doing. I think this is better than it looks, and I have eyes for this card.
Interesting. The card's not on my radar, but I will keep a weather eye out for it.
Yeah. We've got Airbender's Reversal here. This is the one and a white split card lesson. Choose one, destroy target attacking creature, or airbend target creature you control. I think this is just powerful, versatile split card for protecting your own stuff or killing your opponent's stuff.
Yeah, it says airbending on it. It's going to be good.
Yeah, and it says lesson on it. Also good.
Yes. Avatar Enthusiast is up next. This is two and a white for a 2/2. Whenever another ally you control enters, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature.
So I want to not like this card. Like, I don't know why. I'm like, this is a small ball, but literally everything is an ally. And so it's not hard for this card to grow. Like, I want to not like it, but I was pretty impressed by it. Well, what's the gut check here?
I think that card's good. It's disruptible. It really hates to get airbended. Or bounced or whatever. But I think it grows quickly enough that I think it's a card you're going to want to play. I don't know how high of a pick it is. I can't imagine it's an extremely high pick, but I think white decks are going to want to play that deck, that card.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In a similar vein, I have Teo Spirited Glider on this list. This is the 3 and a blue 1/4 flyer. Whenever one or more creatures you control with flying attack, draw a card, then discard a card. When you discard a non-land card this way, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. I thought this was bad, but I also did not like my opponent's untapping with this during early access.
I don't think that card is great. I would imagine you're only playing it in the dedicated blue-white flyers deck. Or maybe you've got some first-time flyers in blue. That's the one on a blue 1/2 flying that gets +1/+1 as long as there's a lesson card in your graveyard. I could see it, but I can't imagine ever picking it highly.
That's how I feel, but I'm just trying to, I want to point out that when I look at this card, that's how I feel. But when I saw it on the battlefield, I didn't like that it was there.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that.
But maybe that just speaks to flying is good. And so anything that has the text flying gets a bump. I don't know. Man, Fire Nation Attacks is so good. This is the 4 and a red instant, make 2/2/2 red soldier creature tokens with firebending 1 and has flashback for 8 and a red. I was high on this last week, and I'm even higher on it this week now that I have my newfound respect for firebending.
Yeah, that card's got to be great. I haven't seen it cast yet, but much like Firebending Lesson, I am very excited to cast my first Fire Nation Attacks.
Yeah.
Cave of Two Lovers is up next. This is 3 and a red for a saga. Chapter 1, you make 2/1/1 allies. Chapter 2, you get a mountain or a cave. Chapter 3, you earthbend 3.
There's a lot to like about this card. Every chapter is impactful. This is just a lot of value packed into a card. Another card that I was like, I'm high on this last week, I'm higher on it this week. And maybe that's just because I like red more this week and I like firebending more. But this card played out really well.
Have you airbended the Cave of Two Lovers yet?
I have not airbended the Cave of Two Lovers, but that sounds really nice.
Red White just seems like it's going to be so good to me.
And it can grind. So that's good. The thing about Red White is that it can be aggressive, but it can grind. Like what you're talking about there, casting Cave of Two Lovers and then on with Chapter 3 on the stack, cast Airbending Lesson on it. That's so much value.
It's a lot of value.
Yeah.
Invasion Tactics is up next. This is 4 and a green for an enchantment. When this enchantment enters, creatures you control get +2/+2 until end of turn. Whenever one or more allies you control deal combat damage to a player, draw a card. This is on your move first up list. Ethan, talk to me about that.
Well, I think I had just lumped these two lines of text as one shots together. But no, this sticks around and all of your allies are Ophidians now.
Yeah, so you almost might say this would be a card you'd want in green-white allies decks.
You get all the credit you want, all the praise you want for finally liking an overrun effect that was good. But it's way like it is not because of the overrun. Like I feel like four in a green enchantment, your allies all cantrip when they connect, or I guess they don't all cantrip, but like you will cantrip once when your allies connect. It was good. It's just annoying because I had sort of like, okay, you cast it. Let me deal with it this combat. And then on subsequent turns, I'd be like, oh, wait, I needed to leave a blocker back. Not because I'm worried about damage, but because I'm worried about you drawing cards.
Card drawing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Professor Zay, Anthropologist, is up next. This is it hybrid for an uncommon O3 that taps to rummage. You can discard a card, draw a card, and then you can pay one tap, sacrifice it to return an instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. Activate only during your turn.
I think this is quietly a blue-black card more than it's a blue-red card. This is a free way to trigger the draw two stuff in blue-black is really strong. And even though like you'd be like, oh, God, then am I really playing a blue-blue O3 in my blue-black deck? I think you should try to do so.
Yes. Blue-red really doesn't want this. I feel pretty strongly that blue-red wants to get the game over with as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Razor Rings up next. This is one and a white for an instant. Deals 4 damage target attacking or blocking creature. You gain life equal to the excess damage dealt this way. This card is
good card.
Really good. You were right on this card being good. I was a little skeptical. It's excellent. I think it might be up there with Airbending Lesson in contention for White's top common. Because the thing that it does is it's so broken against Firebending. There's a thing that happens where in combat, somebody has to make a move first. And if you're the firebending deck, you want your opponent to be tapped out, attack, them to have to block, and then you get to use your firebending mana to play combat tricks to win combat or whatever. But there's a flip side of that where as the defender, if you can set up blocks and hold up mana for a Razor Rings, your firebending opponent just can't take game actions. Or if they do, they're going to get savagely blown out. And even outside of setting up those kind of 2-for-1 type blowouts, just a firebending deck attacking into 2 white mana open is so tough thanks to Razor Rings existing because the life gain is such a speed bump against them also. This is, I think, going to be one of the most important cards to keep what I'm currently viewing as a red-white menace in check.
Yeah. I also want to point out that you're very likely, like what you're talking about is right if you have blocks that you want to line up. But the other option you have with Razor Rings is your firebending opponent attacks with the firebending triggers on the stack, cast Razor Rings. Like, don't let the mana float before you cast your kill spell on the firebending thing.
Like,
so that they can't then use their, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Or they can't use their pump spell to save it. Well,
if they use their pump spell, then they're using their actual mana for the pump spell. Then they aren't getting the advantage they would normally get from the firebending mana.
For sure. Yeah. Razor Rings is, I think, very good and going to be a big player in combat in the format. And the format looks pretty combat centric also, which is cool. The combats are complicated. Forecasting Fortune Teller is up next. I still haven't cast this yet, but it seems amazing to me. It's one and a blue for a 1/3. When it enters, create a clue token. I would assume this has to be the best common in the format after playing the format, even though I haven't cast Forecasting Fortune Teller yet. Have you played with it?
Yes, both. Seen it cast it myself. It's extremely good.
Yeah, because it's just such a good speed bump against the red white decks. It's got high toughness to force them into maybe potentially using tricks to try to get past it, to set up your razor rings type things.
Mm-hmm.
And then Firebending Lesson also. I still haven't cast it, but it's got to be absolutely bonkers in the format.
Yep. A couple of the land cyclers here on the list. First up, Giant Koi. We've talked about the 5/7 with Island Cycling that has Waterbend 3 to be unblockable. It ends games in a hurry in a board stall. Very, very good, I think. But not, again, not a high pick, but just it's nice to have in the back of your head, like, oh, I can just get a win condition at common for my controlling decks.
Yeah, and then Sabertooth Moose Lion, which is the 4GG for 7/7 reach with Forest Cycling. The card's just gigantic. There was one time my opponent played it, and I was like, how? Because I had like red burn spells that dealt 3, and you know, I wasn't packing anything to get a large monster off the board, and it was large and had reach. Like the reach is big text on the old Sabertooth Moose Lion.
That's funny.
Cycle of Renewal is another one. This is 2 and a green for an instant lesson. Sacrifice a land, search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. This was insanely good in the green decks that want to play all of the multicolored green rares, because oftentimes those green decks want lessons as well. This is a lesson. It's an instant as well, which is a really nice bump, like in tandem with, like, if you're Bant, you can hold up your Cycle of Renewal or your Razor Rings. Like, it just gives you a lot of flexibility for a card like this. And getting up to search 2 different land types means, like, you've already got green if you've got this. It's basically, this says you get to cast whatever 3 or 4 colored gold spell you want after you cast this. So there was a while in the beginning of our podcast life cycle where there was a series of enchantments that let you tap for double color of a color, where we were like, well, if you get 3 of this green enchantment, you can splash your Glorybringer or whatever. You know what I mean? This feels similar, where if you get like a couple Cycle of Renewals, you can just play whatever gold cards you want. And it's very nice.
Yeah. The other thing I want to point out about Cycle of Renewal, someone I think shared this with us on Blue Sky, was that if you sack an Earthbent land to Cycle of Renewal,
back.
You're just double ramping.
Yeah. Which is really nice.
I don't think that's going to come up that often, but the fact that it's instant speed, you know, if they're trying to, they go to kill your Earthbent land, sack it in response, that's definitely something to have in your back pocket.
Abandoned Attachments is up next. This is 1 and Izzet for an instant lesson. You can discard a card, and if you do, you draw 2 cards. This, just as a cheap lesson that puts itself in the yard, is very good. Like, there's times, especially with Fire Nation Cadets, that you want lessons in the yard, but a lot of the lessons are dependent on your opponents having creatures that you want to interact with. And this just being one that you can play Fire Nation Cadets on 1, play this on 2, get your lesson in the yard, get your firebending going, regardless of what your opponent is doing, has been very nice.
Yeah. Next is Team Avatar. This is 2 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control attacks alone, it gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. And you could also pay 2 and a white to just discard this card, and it deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control to target creature. A nice split card there. This kind of exalted enchantment. Exalted is a mechanic that when it says it's this first half of text, like when a creature attacks alone, it gives that creature +1/+1. So this basically gives all of your creatures exalted. Those kinds of enchantments always overperform. And the fact that this also has a buyout as a removal spell is quite good.
Yeah. And I think the other hidden thing is you talked about the types of gameplay that happens in the format. And one of them is the big board stally things, which this then gives you a way to churn through. But a more hidden thing is that those board stalls happen, but that you've got a messenger hawk laying.
Messenger hawk,
Or you've got a thing that can become unblockable laying, or like the spirit tokens that are on the ground that can't be interacted with, like Team Avatar plus a spirit token. You're getting smacked around for 7, and then all of a sudden you have to reuse a removal spell on the spirit tokens that can't go in combat. Like, I think Team Avatar might be a way to get black-white to do its thing. And very impressive in blue-black with Messenger Hawks. I think Team Avatar is sneakily very powerful.
Okay, cool.
Pretty high on that. Boomerang Basics, we alluded to. Cheap lessons is exactly what blue-red wants. And I think one of the things we were worried about with blue-red is the density of lessons. The good cards that want lessons often only care about 1. Like the cards that want three lessons just to skip to movers down a little bit. There's Serpent of the Pass, which is 5 blue-blue for a 6/5 that then you can cast with Flash if there are three or more lessons in your graveyard, and it costs one less to cast for each non-creature non-land in your graveyard. That, and also Boomy King of Three Trials, which is 5 and a green for a 4/4. When he enters, choose X, where X is the number of lessons, and you can get 3+/+1 counters, Scry 3 or Earthbend 3. For that card to be good, you really need X to be 3, and the Serpent of the Pass, you really need X to be 3, and getting to 3 lessons is difficult. I did that a fair amount, or was playing those styles of decks a fair amount in early access, and it's not easy. But the really good blue-red cards want 1 lesson in the yard. And it's very doable to get 1 lesson in the yard pretty quickly.
Yep, I agree with that. Next, we've got Twin Blades. This is 2 and a red for an artifact equipment with Flash. When it enters, attach it to target creature you control. That creature gains double strike until end of turn. Equipped creature gets +/+1 and equip cost of 2. You're saying Embercleave at home in our show notes?
Fire Nation Cadets' Soul Ring? This is definitely Embercleave. This card is... Have you seen it yet?
I've seen it. I'm not.
You're not a buyer. I'm a buyer. This Flash, you love this. No, stop. And I love good cards. I also love Invasion Tactics, which is on your movers up list. Get out of here.
I also love good cards.
This has Flash. You can firebend this in.
That's true. This being a real thing you could do with firebending mana is very good. I'll give you that. It's very good.
Yeah. But firebending is very good, which means this is very good.
I think it's, well, whatever. I don't need to dial in this hard on this card. I'll keep my eyes out for it.
It's good content. It's Embercleave at home.
Okay, it's very good content. I agree. June Bounty Hunter is next. 1 and a black for a 2/2. Can't be blocked as long as you've drawn 2 or more cards this turn, and you can pay 1, sacrifice another creature, create a clue token, activate only during your turn.
This is another card that's just sneakily broken, and another card that's also disgusting with Team Avatar, right? Like, you can, this basically says 3 mana sack a creature, this becomes unblockable, then you Team Avatar this up. I lost to that several times. But just making clues and turning your 1/1s into clues, or blanking your opponent's removal spells into clues, all of which you get for 2 mana. This card does so much for 2 mana.
Well, you can't really blank removal spells if your opponent's casting removal on their turn.
I guess that's fair. Yeah. But it stops instant speed removal. Sure.
Yeah.
It's a lot for 2 mana, I guess is what I'll say.
I'm with you. I like it.
And the next one is Hey Bye, Spirit of Balance. This is 2 and Orzhov for a 3/3 uncommon. Whenever Hey Bye enters or attacks, you may sacrifice another creature or artifact. If you do, put 2+/+1 counters on Hey Bye. When Hey Bye leaves the battlefield, put its counters on target creature you control. This was pretty impressive. Again, like we had talked about in my black-white deck feeling a step too slow. I also got smacked around by Hey Bye in decks that were not black-white, decks that were white X or black X. This is a very flexible, powerful card.
I agree. I had to airbending lesson it, and then airbending lessen the thing it dumped its counters on.
Counters on too. There's no way to trade well with it because it's just whenever it leaves.
Well, I was going to do is I'll airbending lessen it. And then when it comes back, I'm going to lightning strike it in response to the trigger. But I thought I could get them. I thought what I could do was be real sneaky and, you're going to sack your thing. Then the trigger to put the counters on Hey Bye will go on the stack and I'll get to lightning strike it.
It's a reflexive trigger, though, right? It's a
reflexive trigger. So if you want to do that, you just got to lightning strike it with the sacrifice trigger on the stack. You don't get to, like,
there's
super
no window
gotcha
in between. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So learn from my mistakes. All right. Movers down shrines. Like, I think these are just unplayable. I don't like to use the U word very often, but I do think unplayable is how we have to categorize these.
Yeah, not tier one for sure.
Not even close. But I don't even think this is like a week 5 fun deck. I don't think this is anything.
The format's very tempo-y. Yeah. For shrines to be a thing.
This is a tough sell. Okay, are we going to fight about Solstice Revelations? You still like this card?
I mean, I don't love it. I don't feel like defending its honor, but I cast some Solstice Revelations and I enjoyed casting it.
So this is 2 and a red for an instant lesson. Exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost if the spell's mana value is less than the number of mountains you control. If you don't cast it this way, you put it into your hand and it has flashback for 6 and a red. Even in your mono red deck, this can't hit a 3-drop on turn 3. Like I was not high on this card. And then I cast it and it revealed a 2-drop when I had 2 mountains in play. And it was like, you want to put this in your hand? I was like, no, I want to cast this. And it was like, you want to put this in your hand? I was like, wait, it doesn't say equal to? And then I was out on this card. I also had that experience.
Good. And it was not a great experience. But but I will say, I don't think this card is very good. Okay. But I do think it's a 3-mana instant that says lesson on it. That's something that you can do with firebending mana. And so I think you're going to play it some amount of the time. I think your hatred of it might lead you to not playing it. And I think you're going to need to play it sometimes.
I think you're right to shout out the, like, if it checks these boxes, it's going to be good. And I probably wasn't checking enough of those boxes, like caring about lessons and having enough firebending sinks for it. So I think that's a good shout.
Kyoshi Battle Fan up next. Oof. Miss for both of us. 2 mana for an artifact. Whenever this enters, create a 1/1 ally, then attach this equipment to it. Equipped creature gets +1/+0, and it's got an equipped cost of 2. What turbo waterbending just isn't a thing, which I think is partially a place where you and I were excited about this card. A 2-mana 2/1 is just way too small ball, and things that are X1s in general, like we shouted out earlier, between earthbending and ally tokens everywhere, this is basically just not a card. Like you're basically playing the equipment, and the equipment is atrocious.
Yep. I do not think this card matters at all.
Similarly, Pretending Poxbearers also felt similarly mediocre and borderline not worth a card, which is 1 and Orzhov for a 2/1 that when it dies into a 1/1.
Yeah, I just don't like, I was not, you know, Beskar Shieldmate was in Kaldheim and it was a similar card, 1 and a white, 2/1 died into a 1/1 in that format. We really liked that card in that format, but that wasn't, I think, a consensus take about that card. And that was a format built around equipment. And so just having a body that you could suit up that then died into another body that you could suit up was relevant. It doesn't really exist here. I don't think, like, Poxbearers is fine, but it's not, it's very replacement level, I think.
Yeah. And lastly, Path to Redemption, just to really hammer this home from our notable omissions list last week, 1 and a white for an aura, enchanted creature can't attack or block. You can pay 5, sack the aura to exile enchanted creature and make a 1/1 white ally creature. This card is so far behind whatever the deal for is Razor Rings. Like, it's laughable. Razor Rings is wildly better than Path to Redemption.
Yeah, I could see if you're in like white green ally aggro, mono white ally aggro, you might play one of these, maybe. But this not shutting off abilities, not stopping creatures from crewing, and being able to be airbended or sacrificed or whatever. There's just so many ways to punish. I still feel like this is a format about permanents being on the battlefield, and a removal spell that leaves a permanent on the battlefield is not good.
Pour one out for pacifism.
Nah, it feels great. I love hating on pacifism.
Okay. Anything else? I feel like we left it all on the field.
Left it all on the field. Very excited. Have high hopes for this format. And I hope it pans out as such, at least for this first week.
Yeah. Go forth. Enjoy firebending. Enjoy airbending. Cast some red and white cards, I think, is my advice. If you want to do well early.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
All right. On that note, thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure to give it a listen.
You can find all our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlogs, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, our Patreon page, if you want to check that out, is all available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. We'll be right back.
Thank you.